ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय I'm going to speak on a controversial topic. Some devotees think themselves superior by avoiding controversies, but the policy of all previous acharyas was to clarify contentious points for the benefit of their disciples, not to leave their disciples confused, because actually the guru himself has no clear vision or commitment. A sadhu may wish to appear saintly by avoiding controversy, but that actually demonstrates his laghutva, or lightness, or lack of substance, as compared to gurutva, which means the quality of a guru, heaviness. So, I'm going to speak about leadership within ISKCON. All devotees are important, but especially leaders. Of course, in one sense, all devotees are leaders, because devotees are the best position, best people in all of human society, and everyone should look up to them, but clearly within Vaishnava society, some are leaders and some are not. There's a saying that an organization is as good as its leaders. Obviously, they have a vital role to play. We see that in a state, if the leader is good, then everything flourishes. If not, everything deteriorates. The same thing in a company or a family or any grouping of humans. From an exoteric perspective, one reason why ISKCON flourished, by an exoteric perspective, I don't mean it's a wholly invalid perspective, one reason why ISKCON flourished, or was even able to be established in the first place, was because of Srila Prabhupada's leadership abilities. And it could also be said that one reason why ISKCON is, from some people's perspective, including mine, not doing so well, is because of problems with leaders. Actually, I think we could say that's even a quite a neutral statement, if you examine the whole situation in an unbiased way. To be a leader in ISKCON is a divine service, because, or should be a divine service, to take responsibility for spreading the divine mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is certainly a very grave responsibility. An organization as good as its leaders suggests that leaders can do much good and much harm also. If the leader is good, which means good in heart, good in intention, and has leadership qualities, he can do much good. Or if he's bad at heart, or does not have leadership qualities, can do much harm. Now, this is not going to be a rant about leaders in ISKCON in general, but it's particularly, particularly speaking this because in the last couple of years, several devotees serving under my guidance and inspiration, whatever inspiration may be there, have taken up the, especially in the last couple, in the last few years, have taken up with divine inspiration the responsibility for starting various Krishna conscious projects, preaching, establishing centers, farm communities, gurukuls, book distribution parties, and so on. And I've encouraged them to do so. That was my training on the job. I've encouraged them to do so despite, in many cases, lack of resources, lack of manpower, starting from scratch in many cases, or just with little resources. This is somewhat or quite different to the much lauded Chopati model, in which they set up a new center up with much planning, and with if they're going to set up a new center, a new town, sufficient manpower, all facilities are given there from the beginning. Well, that's a different approach, and no one can deny that in many ways it works. They're doing very well. Srila Prabhupada didn't have that luxury when he was starting the movement. He wanted to spread it very quickly and widely, and so even very new devotees would be sent out just without knowing hardly anything about the more than the basics of the philosophy, and would be sent out to start a new center. And under Srila Prabhupada's able guidance, the movement did spread widely all over the world. Sometimes our devotees were sent to countries which they'd hardly even heard of, and they had not a clue about the culture, the language, and they didn't get prepared like Christian missionaries prepare their missionaries by training them in the language and the culture and the customs and all this kind of thing, but just go. That was it. And by Srila Prabhupada's mercy and the spirit, and mercy not just in a vague way, but by his very practical guidance also, plus the spirit that he imparted to them, devotees were able to be successful in establishing Krishna consciousness in many countries, not without a lot of struggles. But so my training was training on the job. Go on a Sankirtan party with just a few new devotees. Bangladesh and Thailand and all these places, and without much, if any, background training on the job. So I've encouraged my disciples also on that way to struggle and learn and call out for the mercy, the immersion method. It can be rough, but you can get a lot of mercy also by doing so. The mercy of Srila Prabhupada and Krishna. You're also liable to make a lot more mistakes that way than if you are trained and have lots of support, but you can grow by your mistakes. Or you can just fossilize into a mistake-making entity, that you just take the mistakes to be normal, and this is how we do things. So we should learn from our mistakes and go on to do things in a better way. Therefore, this lecture, which will probably not be finished in one session, is especially meant for leaders serving under me. It could possibly be heard by others with profit. I'm going to point out some of the negative syndromes that can develop in leaders and others also, but particularly in leaders. I'm not saying that any of the devotees who are serving me are insincere, nor was what I'm going to say directed at anyone in particular, nor should it be taken or used to accuse anyone, but it does, I do intend to address some actual and some possible syndromes and symptoms and offer some advice and some direction on what we should be doing, what we should be aspiring to, and what we should not be aspiring to. On the table up there is a magnifying glass. Please bring that. Nor is it exhaustive. I'm going to talk about leadership. There are many, many books written on leadership in the modern world. They're mostly about management within modern corporations, which suggests that that leadership is a problem everywhere. If you need so many books and seminars on leadership, then it suggests that the quality of leadership in general all over the world is not very good. It may be also that modern corporations for which these books and seminars are made, they're such artificial entities anyway that they don't spawn the kind of leadership which would be considered satisfactory for such corporations. Huge multinational corporations where you don't know actually who's the boss, who you're working for. You don't know the person. The products they manufacture, just like if you're working for Coca-Cola, massive corporation. Personally, I would find it extremely difficult to be inspired by promoting Coca-Cola all over the world. It's of no actual benefit to anyone. And that goes for, well, I mean, the whole of material life is no benefit for anyone. Artificial corporations that are artificial and being so big and so widespread that you don't really know who you're working for. It's not like working for the local king or landlord. So in one sense, ISKCON's like that, and Srila Prabhupada made it like that, is suitable for the modern world. We all know who we're working for. Krishna, Srila Prabhupada. So the leaders of our society, they do not claim to be the enjoyers of or the beneficiaries of that which those serving under them are working for. Although that can be the problem, as I will speak about, is that leaders may start to think like that. But anyway, there are many books on leadership, and you can read them if you want to be a better leader. I've never been much inspired by such books because they're written by materialistic people, for materialistic people, but they do have some good points. Personally, I find the great inspiration for leadership in Srila Prabhupada. And notwithstanding the various criticisms that have been made of Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, I find it overall very inspiring to see how Srila Prabhupada, not only Prabhupada Lilamrita, but there are many biographical works of Srila Prabhupada, and we can see how he struggled against all adversity and dealt with all kinds of different people, and was focused on his goals. You can find all these kind of qualities written about in books. Of course, just reading them in a book doesn't mean that you can automatically pick them up. So you can see there are so many books on leadership, and some of them are more famous than others. Some things are fairly obvious once they're pointed out to you. They may not be obvious if they're not pointed out. That leaders have to be organized. Although it's funny, if you see some of our leaders, including, well, I'm a leader and I'm not super organized. Maybe over-organization is not good, but definitely a leader is an organizer. So himself should be organized, focused, know what he's doing, have clear plans and vision and commitment, and not be whimsical, that you have one plan one day and another plan the next day, and or you don't really have any plan, and just spontaneity might be the ultimate aim of devotional service, but it's not a very good principle to run an organization on. That you just, whenever you think of something, okay, let's do it. And so devotees, they themselves can't plan their life out, because at any time they can be asked to do anything. You might think, well, that's training them in surrender, but again, it's not a very good way to spread a movement. Okay, let's go out on book distribution, and you're out on book distribution. Okay, let's go out on Harinam. Okay, let's go and meet the mayor, and so on and so on, just minute by minute, changing plans. Of course, I'm not saying anyone's that. Manduka Gati. They're not that much working like a frog, which just jumps. Well, it also has some, it has a kind of general direction, but it just jumps to the side, one long jump to one side, and then a short jump to the next, and like that. A leader has to make decisions. One who doesn't make decisions is afraid of making decisions, dithers, cannot be a good leader. So a leader has to make decisions, but he also has to consider very carefully before making decisions. Often you don't have time to consider everything very carefully, although major decisions should be well thought out, which means consulting with others. So, minute by minute you may have to make decisions, just like if a drunk person were to walk in here and start making a disturbance, you'd have to consider on the spot how to deal with him. So a leader has to not just make decisions, but make good decisions. And the very nature of decisions is that you can't always tell what the result will be, and sometimes it will, whatever decision you make, it may seem that certainly some decisions are better formulated than others, but sometimes what appears to be a good decision may, because the course of events may not be such a, may turn out not to be such a good decision, and so on. So leaders tend to be blamed. Srila Prabhupada writes in the first canto, I'm paraphrasing, that leaders are generally criticized by the very people who they're working to benefit. So you have to be a bit thick-skinned also, and not get discouraged if people discourage you. But there are various things which I'm just doing the whizzing through, all the kind of things you can read about in these management books and seminars. But the primary and most important quality to be a leader in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is to be a sincere servant of Srila Prabhupada's mission, Which means that, first of all, you should know what the mission is. So, simply to be sincere may not be enough. Especially if, as is widely perceived, the movement today is not exactly on the point of the mission as Srila Prabhupada conceived it. It's changed, so you have to know what the actual mission is. You have to be informed. Sincere servant means that one has no personal motives. Not that you're, not that one is doing it for lab, not being a leader for lab, puja, or pratishta, for monetary gain, honor, respect, position, and so on. Lava means worldly gain, puja means respect, and pratishta can mean also respect, and it can also mean being established in a position. So, worldly gain, honor, and position. One should not have such personal motives to be a sincere devotee or a sincere leader. So leaders have to work on being pure devotees. Management skills and leadership qualities are less important. It's not that they're not important. Some devotees have natural leadership qualities, others don't, but the most important thing is to really be concerned about oneself being a pure devotee or doing whatever is necessary to become a pure devotee and helping others also to advance on the path of pure devotion. So that's... So one has to, how do you do that? How do you be a pure devotee? Well, it's the simple program that Srila Prabhupada gave to everyone. It's rising early, chanting, associating with devotees, reading the books, having classes, taking only Krishna prasadam. It's the same program for everyone. The very nature of management is that it often consumes our time and attention, that we don't have time for sadhana, or it may seem like that, but that is an illusion of maya, actually, because if we don't have sadhana, we won't be able to manage anything properly. Then if we're always, I have to do this, I have to do that, there's always something to do. Just like I used to hear from my mother, the saying, a woman's work is never done, is never complete, because traditionally there would be many kids to look after, and cleaning and cooking, and even if you've done that for the day, there's always something to do, like knitting or something like that. So a woman, so similarly, a manager's work is never done. If you're in a temple, there's always something to do, and you can get absorbed by that and think, I have to do this, I have to do that, and then your sadhana gets sucked away, but then the management becomes management in rajagun instead of sattvagun. This a temple program or the regular program of sadhana, that's meant to bring us to the platform of Shuddha Sattva, pure devotional service. But at least that brings us to the platform of Sattvagun, in which we can think and act calmly, whereas management by its very nature tends to be somewhat in Rajogun, because we're dealing with all different kinds of people, and money, and there's power and position and prestige involved. So unless we are very rigid in our... Oh, really getting a response there. Unless we are... The tick-ticky is tick-ticking. In Bengali, that lizard is called tick-ticky. And its tick-ticking is supposed to confirm what you say. So, maybe it was a manager in its last life. An ISKCON manager. Must have... Like in the Uttara Ramayana, the head of the mat ended up being a dog. You never know. Got born in a devotee's house. Kita janma hao jatha tu adas. Bhaktivinoda Thakur prayed, well, better to be an insect in the body of a devotee. So this is an insect eater in the house of a devotee. In between tick-ticking, they eat insects. So, back to the... We should be in sattva-gun. Yeah, if we get into rajagun, that deteriorates into tamagun. Like getting the body of a lizard. Like making offenses. So we have to be very careful to not fall into the illusion of thinking that... I have so many things to do, so I don't have a morning program. Srila Prabhupada, he, in one letter, he wrote that if the leaders see that all devotees are chanting 16 rounds, following the regulated principles, and having regular kirtan and all these regular standard programs, he said, then management will be at your finger's end. Isn't it? You remember that quote? In other words, it'll be very easy. Because a spiritual organization doesn't run in exactly the same way as a material organization. And there's similar things we have to deal with. People, money, properties, laws, and so on. But how we engage people, and an organization is, after all, ultimately about people. Well, in business corporations, they say the bottom line is the profit line. But in Krishna consciousness, our real bottom line, to use that horrible cliche, is people. We're interested in people. I mean, we're not, or we shouldn't be interested simply in collecting numbers of people, like political parties or Christian missionaries or something like that. But we're really interested in helping people to come up to the highest standard of spiritual life, of pure Krishna consciousness. And the leader means they have to engage others in Krishna conscious activities, which are meant for bringing yet more people. Ultimately, all activities in Krishna conscious are directed toward preaching Krishna conscious, or as Srila Prabhupada said, everything centers around book distribution. So engaging people, when it's not exactly in the business sense, the idea that, well, you're paying people and so you can expect them to work. The boss in a company feels he has the right to yell at an employee because I'm paying you to do this job, you should do it properly. So he's justified in that way. Some companies, they have a different approach. I know one company when I was a kid. I have to keep on saying that because I'm out of touch with the modern Western world, but Waitrose, a chain of stores, supermarkets in England, they made every employee, even from the lowest level, a sharer in the profits of the company. Of course, those who are cleaning the floors after the shop is closed, the amount of percentage that they would get would be very little, but it's supposed to be an incentive that we're all in this together. So, but still, it's money motivation. Whereas in Krishna consciousness, we're motivating people with the hope, by giving them the hope that by serving Krishna, they will ultimately attain the highest goal of life, pure love of Krishna, and that even immediately you will be happy. If you take to Krishna consciousness, you will be happy. But devotees don't always perceive that. Their faith in Krishna consciousness may not be very strong. And they might not be feeling very happy. Actually, if they are chanting 16 rounds and following the principles and dancing in kirtan, they will be happy. But Maya doesn't go to sleep. And she's always trying to place doubts in devotees' minds. So they may not be, they may have various doubts about Krishna consciousness. So to motivate them, they will be influenced by various anartas from their previous material conditioning. They will have the tendency towards sense gratification. It doesn't just go away by putting on tilak, you might have noticed. it's much easier to talk about being Krishna conscious than to actually be fully Krishna conscious. But we have to always strive for that. So, you can't treat devotees like people in corporations treat employees. It won't work because they're motivated in a different way. We can best inspire devotees in Krishna consciousness because that is the way to, in the long run, that they will develop and you will develop and everything else will develop, is if the devotees are inspired. They will be inspired if the leaders themselves are inspired in Krishna consciousness, and that inspiration will come from the leaders engaging in sadhana. Not that they engage in sadhana all day, because our movement is not meant to be one of bhajanandis. If you want to engage in sadhana all day, well, that's nice in one sense, but then you shouldn't be a leader of this movement, because we have to engage in sadhana and engage in various activities for spreading Krishna consciousness also. So the leader himself must be strong by performing sadhana, and that will inspire others also to perform the sadhana that they need to perform to be inspired in Krishna consciousness. And if the leader himself sets a poor example in that, then everyone else will think the same way. Or if the leader thinks that, well, I have some special privilege not to engage in sadhana because I'm a leader, well, we never find that Srila Prabhupada said such a thing, that you have a special privilege. Rather, he enjoined that all the leaders should be leaders by example. And devotees will be inspired if they see that leaders are also busy working hard in Krishna's service, and also not just performing activities of sadhana, but taking pleasure in that the leaders themselves are inspired to chant good rounds, to dance in kirtan, among all their management business, that the leaders like to talk about Krishna and the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, that they read Srila Prabhupada's books. It's very important for leaders in Krishna consciousness to read Srila Prabhupada's books. There are many other books also, but it's very important that leaders be founded in Srila Prabhupada's books. Yeah, everyone please turn off their cell phone. Because Srila Prabhupada's books present the philosophy of Krishna consciousness in a manner that is exactly suitable for people of the modern age. Now, there are many other books also, and Srila Prabhupada does, within his books, recommend reading books of the previous acharyas. And apart from books of the previous acharyas, there are many books that we can read by karmis, like management books, and there's so many things we can read. But we should be well founded in Prabhupada's books, because if we start talking, if we emphasize other things or more deep philosophy, and by that I mean the complexities, and it's not to say the Prabhupada didn't present deep philosophy, but it is a fact that there are levels of complexity among the teachings of our previous acharyas, just like Chaitanya Charitamrita is considered to have the essence of all the sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami. If you read all the sandarbhas, then you'll get in much more detail the essence that we have in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Srila Prabhupada presented all the teachings of the previous acharyas in a simplified form, not in a minimized form, but in a simplified form. So if we get into discussing so many complex things and start thinking in a very complicated way, then it's going to be difficult to lead others to the simple process that Srila Prabhupada gave us of chanting Hare Krishna and being happy and understanding Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and Nectar of Devotion. So Srila Prabhupada said these four books are sufficient for preaching. What's the exact word he used? For preaching Krishna consciousness. You're supposed to know everything now, because you're making this book. So the simple examples that Srila Prabhupada gave, they can immediately communicate the essence of Krishna consciousness. So don't make things... And in our preaching of Krishna consciousness, and being a leader in Krishna consciousness means to be a preacher, because it means preaching outside, showing the example by preaching outside, preaching to devotees. We have to preach to devotees, otherwise we can't keep them nice, happily engaged in Krishna's service. Preaching along the lines that Srila Prabhupada gave us, the many, many analogies he gave, which simply convey in a very direct way convey the essence of all the teachings of Krishna consciousness. So complexity isn't bad, it is required for some devotees, not for everyone. And then there's other kinds of complexities, getting into mundane psychology and so many things. I don't recommend that at all. That will, if we try to deal with people on a psychological, in a psychological way, derived from non-devotees, we're just going to get on the mental platform instead of on the spiritual platform that we get from the Shastra as presented to us by Srila Prabhupada. So that's again why I'm not so much in favor of reading all these management books by mundane people, even though they may have some good insights. So, yeah, be busy, work hard, be happy in Krishna's service, be always hopeful in Krishna's service. At least here in India, where people are, many people are much more pious than the average people in other countries and cultures. If devotees are sincere and work hard for spreading Krishna consciousness, and also practice Krishna consciousness very sincerely, according to the directions given by Srila Prabhupada, everything will come. The movement will expand, more devotees will come, everything will develop. That doesn't mean that no management is needed, no planning is needed, but definitely in India, and actually all over the world, although it's in many ways more of a struggle in other places, everything will develop. So leaders should be leaders on this principle of being ideal devotees, as stated by Sanatan Goswami, prachar kare keho na kare achar, achar kare keho na kare prachar, acha pracha name karaha duvikarj tumi sarva guru tumi jagate arj, referring to Haridas Thakur. Sanatana Goswami said that some devotees preach, but they don't follow acha, they're not very good in sadhana or proper behavior of a devotee. They're good talkers, or they're good preachers, they're good at gathering people, but then they themselves don't set a very good example. Others are very pukka in their practice of Krishna consciousness, but they don't preach much. But Haridas Thakur, Sanatana Goswami said to Haridas Thakur, you both preach about the holy name and you practice the chanting of the holy name in an ideal manner, and therefore you are fit to be the guru of everyone because you are the best person within the whole world. So, leaders should be selfless. They should have all these leadership qualities like being organized and so on. They should themselves strive to be pure devotees. And a leader in a preaching movement means we should take the essence of preaching, which is try to help others to come to Krishna consciousness. And when they're coming to Krishna consciousness, and those who have come to Krishna consciousness, to help them to come up and develop in Krishna consciousness. Not that a leader is dominating others, but he lives for the benefit of others, with others, among them, sharing with them. In one sense, a leader is above the others. He has to take a leadership role, means you have to take a position above others. But really, because we're all servants of Krishna, ultimately, Jivesvarup Hoy Krishna Nitya Das, we're all equal on the spiritual platform. There is an etiquette of respecting those who are senior. There is discipline is required. Those who are in leadership roles can't be exhibit humility to the extent that they don't tell others what to do. They have to take a leadership role, means you have to tell others what to do. But a happy attitude is, we've seen all the best loved and successful in the sense of not material success. We don't measure success by buildings and numbers of devotees exactly. In terms of numbers of books distributed, well, these are some measures of success, but the greatest measure will be how devotees are becoming advanced and happy in Krishna consciousness. The two things go together. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. If devotees are happy, that's a measure of success, and that happiness doesn't mean because they're eating lots of food cooked in ghee and they have very big comfortable beds to sleep on, but rather that they're happy on the platform of vairagya vidya, detachment and spiritual knowledge. So a leader has this internal humility, which shouldn't be so internal that it's not visible in any shape or form. he lives with the devotees, not above them, not so aloof from them. There's this term, ivory, living in an ivory tower. Have you heard that? It means you're living completely cut off from each, from others, and you don't really know what their needs and their problems are, but you're just ruling by diktat. You're just living in your ivory tower, giving out orders without properly interacting with devotees, and really, appreciating their sacrifices, and encouraging them not to teach and preach so as to, in the sense of being a big boss or owning people, these are my devotees, they belong to me, I made you a devotee, therefore you are my property for all of eternity, and you have to do whatever I say. Not this kind of attitude. Not to dominate or to manipulate or to exploit. In other words, don't be a monster. This is a term which I've coined. I don't know if it's a theological contribution. It's more like maybe something of the opposite. Not of the opposite, but this term, a monster. The monster. What the monster is, I will now begin to describe. Again, this lecture is particularly for leaders serving in various capacities under me, who just by the nature of their leadership go out, do something, and the fact that I'm traveling widely and can't oversee them so much, and can't be with them all the time, which also helps leaders to grow because they get some space to grow. And that there is, I mean, I'm saying leaders are under me. Why me? We do have our GBCs and this and that, but they're also overstretched, or in some cases they're not very interested in the devotees who are officially in their zone, if they're not their own disciples or they're not working directly under them. And so leaders may be on their own to a large extent, and I'm just afraid that it's possible that they may, seeing the example of some others, or for whatever reason, they may become what I call monsters. It's better to just sit at home and chant peacefully rather than build up some big project and be a monster. A monster means that there may be people serving under you, but then they're not happy, they feel constricted, they can't grow properly in Krishna consciousness. So maybe I'm the monster for pointing all these, or for even talking about these things, or saying such things. How can we say that leaders in our movement are monsters? Well, Srila Prabhupada did say that there are demons in the guise of devotees, so it's not impossible. And it may also be that someone's not exactly a demon, but they're just a square peg in a round hole. They're not really suited for the position, and they're trying to do it, but due to the frustration that arises from their incapacity and their own failure to recognize that, they themselves are frustrated, which manifests as monstrous behavior. So maybe I'm the problem, I'm the monster, but we have to judge everything according to Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. And in this case also by pratyaksha, by direct experience of seeing different people. Of course, pratyaksha is to be understood in terms of what we learn from Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. What is a monster? I'm saying that some of the leaders are what I would refer to as monsters, and I'm just cautioning others not to become like that. I'm certainly not saying that all leaders in our movement are monsters, but definitely I have some specific devotees or leaders in our movement in mind, not that any of them share, or not that any of them have all the symptoms that I'm going to describe. And some non-leaders also may have some of these symptoms, so it can be instructive for all of us. In some areas in India and in other places also. And by the way, this is not, I'm not claiming you a unique vision here. This is about certain individuals. It is perceived by others also. It's not just my idea. So if I'm a monster for calling other monsters, others, or perceiving others as monsters, then maybe those who are perceived as monsters will have to do something about all the monsters like myself, and probably they will want to do something if they hear about this lecture. What do I mean by a monster? Those leaders who, by their attitudes and policies, actually stifle the very preaching that they're and growth of devotees that they're supposed to be fostering and developing. In some places, the biggest obstacle to spreading the movement is the leaders themselves. By their nasty attitudes and policies. And I've heard this. I won't quote, but even from some of the most, I've heard it said about one of the leaders in our movement by another highly respected leader in our movement, that the only hope for proper development in his area is after he passes away. So we do have a problem. But I'm afraid that this syndrome that they've created and the kind of people and the followers that they have attracted and trained in to be or giving themselves as the example, it's quite likely that the syndrome that they've set up will persist and multiply even after they pass away. So what are these symptoms? Well, I'll give an example. In the early 1980s, when I was in Bangladesh, in those days, fax was the latest technology, although it wasn't very common or widespread, especially in Bangladesh. Probably there were less than a dozen fax machines in the whole country. The internet was not dreamed of. Jayapataka Maharaj came once bringing the first ever portable computer I'd ever seen, which had about 20K RAM or so. And if it, no, they didn't have RAM in those days. And it looked like a Singer sewing machine, and that was really advanced in those days. So there was no internet. There were phones, but mostly it didn't work. And so we were quite cut off from what was going on in much of the ISKCON world, which was in many ways quite good, because what was going on in many ways wasn't good. So one devotee, my old friend who I haven't seen for many years, Bhumna Prabhu, godbrother, he had just been in Europe. So I said that, well, we've heard so many good things about Bhagawan, the GBC in much of Europe. He's doing so many things, making so many devotees, getting so many books distributed, getting all kinds of properties, meeting big people. And at this, but from others, we're hearing so many complaints about him. So what's the problem? Why are they complaining when he's doing so many good things? And Bhumna said, well, there's no real problem. It's just that he's trying to edit out the third verse from the Shikshashtaka. So there's a very humorous person, as you can understand from that. I could tell you several humorous stories about him. Very intelligent in an unusual way. So maybe the, if you want to put it in a sarcastic way, maybe the prominent syndrome of the monster who's supposed to be a devotee, and maybe as a devotee, is that they seem to think that the Trinadapi verse doesn't apply to them. That's meant for telling others. You should be humble in relation to me. Not that I should be humble in relation to anyone else. They perceive their position as a conferring on them a divine right to rule others as a dictator. That they think that their position entitles them to expect total surrender to themselves. We see Srila Prabhupada, he dealt with different devotees on different levels in many ways, and although he spoke of total surrender, he inspired devotees toward that. He was very strict in many ways, but he was also understanding enough to know that not everyone is ready to completely surrender on the spot. Just like we hear stories of some Buddhist yogi or whatever, in the city, in a cave, in the mountain, in China or whatever, or Tibet, and the disciple, someone wants to be his disciple, and he comes outside the cave, and the guru says, well, just wait outside. So the would-be disciple waits for 3 days in the snow, and then the guru says, okay, come in. It's like he's testing him to see if he's sincere. So that is not exactly our Vaishnava process, to deliberately put people through much difficulty in the name of making them surrender. Of course, difficulty is there, for instance, in book distribution, and it may be just in the practice of Krishna consciousness. Newcomers, they often find it difficult just to get up early in the morning. But if we think that just by edict, just by saying that everyone should surrender, then it's not going to work. Oh, it may work for some time, but it doesn't work very happily. I've heard more than one leader say that, well, we just want a bunch, or say something to this effect, that what we really need is a bunch of robots who will go out on book distribution without thinking, and with I've heard this specific word used, which may be a test to their own difficulty in trying to manage so many devotees of various species of wild minds, and it's not an easy job, there's no doubt, and it would be much easier if everyone just did whatever you said. But if you, and it's one kind of management to manage in that style, that you just, everyone just has to do what you say. without questioning. So in one sense it's easier for the manager, but no one develops properly in Krishna consciousness. You're not dealing with the complexity of the situation of people's minds and their needs, and it's easier in some way for the manager, although no one likes him, and eventually some of those who originally respected him, they come to actually, they may actually come to despise him. He rules by fear, expecting total surrender. Their mantra is cooperate. But cooperate means people work together, but in their dictionary it means just do whatever I say without asking any questions. And with full surrender, and you know, it doesn't matter what you're thinking, what your physical state is, if you're, you know, your mother may be dying or something, and that, you know, well, you have to, you know, don't think of that, just fully surrender, and so on. So, the word cooperation is one of the most misused words within our movement. The monsters seem to think that they are like God, that they can do anything, say anything, shout at anybody, even without reason, and they're totally unaccountable. Whatever they do should just be accepted. It's all divine. Even to question them, even to or even to be slightly unwilling to do what they say immediately is a major offense. Even in worldly matters, of which such leaders have very little experience, once they decide, say, okay, I'm going to buy this car, for instance. We're going to buy this car. And someone comes along and says, well, he may be a car dealer who has good experience, and says, or I heard from a car dealer that actually this kind of car, it's not so very good, but they've made up their mind and they are right, and they're not willing to take any advice, even from a knowledgeable well-wisher. And buying a car or anything, building a wall or whatever it may be, that they've decided, finished, and that's, you know, it's God has spoken. Even when it becomes obvious to everyone that they've made a mistake, they can never admit it, and even if they rectify it, they'll never apologize or admit it. Or come to understand that, well, I do make mistakes, and that I should probably consult others in matters in which I'm not expert. They don't have to explain or take the opinion of others, even though what they do affects others. They don't have to consider very much about how others will be affected. They are above all such considerations. It's my way or the highway. They need yes men. They surround themselves with people who are just ready to do whatever they say, either by fear or because they pay them. Generally incompetent people, only incompetent people are like that, whose only qualification is that they're just ready to tolerate whatever abuse the monster gives them. And so they're surrounded by incompetent people who can never develop the Krishna consciousness movement as it's meant to be. Ruling by fear or by psychological manipulation is cooperation. Cooperation, another term follow the authorities. They always say follow the authority, it means follow them. But they themselves, they don't follow any authority. And if anyone above them tries to tell them what to do, they don't like that at all. They're not... their training, well, they mean that they generally don't put much effort, if any, into training people who have come into Krishna consciousness, training them to be good devotees, or how they helping people to come up in Krishna consciousness. But the only training they give by their bad example is in non-Vaishnava behavior. They may put it very sweetly that, for instance, they say, don't mix with devotees from other groups because you might make offenses. So better don't, or you have to keep focused, you see. So in this way, they keep everyone within their own circle by psychological manipulation. They can neither be rectified, because they're not willing to listen to anyone, they think they're already perfect, nor can they be removed, because leaders are very reluctant to remove anyone for being incompetent, or even for making serious mistakes or offenses, because they're afraid that if we remove one for doing something wrong, then everyone will start looking at me next, and then maybe they'll remove me. That seems to be the mentality. So it comes that leaders cannot do anything wrong in their eyes, among them. To think that they could do anything wrong is a major mistake. Although we see in the Bhagavatam that Vyasadeva, he doesn't omit stories of Lord Brahma, Lord Indra, respectable people making serious mistakes. We certainly don't condemn them for that. We still respect them for who they are, the people who have attained such a position by their exceptionally pious activities. But the example is given just to show that, well, there are various things we can learn from this. One thing is, however big you are, you can still make mistakes if you're not in the proper consciousness. That's something we should all learn, however big we are. Of course, those who are great pure devotees, they don't make the kind of error that Lord Brahma and Lord Indra did, but we shouldn't prematurely consider ourselves to be greater than Lord Brahma. it's like ISKCON is like their personal property, or like some temple is run. Some temples seem to be run mostly for the convenience of the temple leaders and their family, especially if they're family people. They're very stringent about, we have to follow the laws of ISKCON. But they use them, they without seeing the spirit of the laws, they use those laws to keep others down, not allow them to come up. You have to get approval by the committee, and the committee won't approve you. It's like some... I often use that term, Kafka-esque situation. You have to get approval by the committee, but the committee never gives you approval, and so on and so on. So they use the laws of ISKCON to bolster their own position and keep others out. They're sectarian, like that. Our own group, we only trust people in our own group. Our own group is the best. Don't mix with others. Our guru is the best. Our leader is the best. I am the best. Just see how well we're doing. No, not a very broad vision for preaching, that how we should actually cooperate, what we could be doing as a broad movement. They're just in their own little world. They're content with their own little scene. They always like to say, well, things are going on so well, better than ever before, and always promoting that everything's so wonderful, and in this way they just don't like to face up to very real problems, such as themselves being problems. And that many devotees naturally get estranged from such a kind of leadership. People look at our movement here in India, they look at it, they see it's very nice. As I heard many years ago from the late Sridhar Maharaj, our godbrother, that most people, they see ISKCON, they look at it, they think it's very nice, they come closer and they run away further than they ever, as far away as they can from it. Of course, that's not true in all situations, but he felt it was enough of a reality to say to me, he would never say it publicly, that's the difference. Well, maybe he might, but maybe that's the difference between me and him, is that I say it publicly. Another of my godbrothers, again in Juhu, I was told, there's Pancharatna Prabhu, godbrother. Many years ago he said to me, actually, the only real problem in our movement is personal interest. Everyone's acting, not everyone, many devotees are acting for personal interest. So again, I'm not saying that every leader by any means is like this, but there are some who have some of these symptoms, and I just don't want at least my disciples, those who are in leadership positions, not to fall into this trap of Maya and become like this. I'm not saying that any of my disciples are like this, but I'm afraid of any of them becoming even partially like this. So we have to see how do monsters become monsters? No doubt they started off sincerely, but maybe they got carried away, given a lot of independence without a lot of guidance, and then the authority and the respect that is invested in religious leaders is probably the most corruptible. There's the position of a guru or a religious leader is the most open to hypocrisy, even more than that of politicians. People expect hypocrisy in politicians, and many people nowadays, they expect hypocrisy in religious leaders. But many people also hope that religious leaders, they still have hope that religious leaders are actually the saintly persons that they're advertised to be. So be saintly. If a leader has a position that is expected to be occupied by a saintly person and takes the facility and the honor that accrues to a saintly person from pious people, but is not actually saintly and doesn't really have the interest of others at hand, or as in some cases, actually very nasty. That's why I'm calling them monsters. It may sound like a terrible term, But actually, some I'm seeing are actually nasty. The overwhelming or the prominent symptom of their personality is this nastiness. Then you become a monster. By this saying in English of delusions of grandeur, that you think you're very great because people start to respect you. You can't digest the honor and pass it up to Guru and Krishna, but it goes to your head. There are all these things. I mean, it's not just something that happens in the Krishna conscious movement. It could be, you know, someone's just some ordinary kid. He somehow or other becomes famous by becoming a football star or a rock star, and it goes to his head. So that he thinks he's very great, and he no longer cares for those who nurtured him in his childhood, and he like this. He just thinks he's so much superior to them, and so much superior to anything else. Devotees can also be carried away by the bad example of others. Just like if you see those who are respected within our movement, and some of them are like this. They're very domineering, self-promoting, shamelessly praise themselves. Have you heard that? It's just regular. I'm doing so much, we're doing this, we're doing that. Kartaham. They get carried away by this, by following the wrong example. You can become a monster also, and actually that's why I got out of management shortly before I took sannyas, out of necessity, not due to any particular management ability. I was in various leadership positions from an age that you wouldn't do that kind of thing now, make a 23-year-old kid in charge of ISKCON's preaching in a whole country, even though ISKCON's preaching at that time wasn't very much. But we don't do that kind of thing. But in those days, we didn't have much choice. So one thing was, when I was talking about Bhagawan and the kind of mood that he was setting, was like he was known as the Sun King, after Louis the something or other of France, who lived very opulently and didn't care very much for the citizens, and he was despotic. So Bhagawan was named like that. He was very domineering, and I'm right, and I'm everyone else is wrong, and all this kind of thing. Well, again, I may be the monster for talking like this, but that whole mood went through, it wasn't just him, but went through our whole movement. And eventually, Bhagawan and others, they fell down due to their offenses, it seems, to so many devotees. Offenses to so many devotees. Nowadays, somehow or other, devotees are going on. They're not falling down. They just go on. Maybe they're not so extremely offensive as some of those leaders were. But that infiltrated throughout the whole movement, and it was like, if you're a leader, you have to have an expensive watch, and all the that was an important characteristic of a leader, and you could judge a leader, his prestige and position, largely by his watch, which was ridiculous. I was in Bangladesh, so I had a Seiko, which was a little bit up from the cheap Timexes. But there was a ridiculous atmosphere in our whole movement. What kind of car you drive. This was very much in the West, but it came over to the the waves of contamination leaked out even to the places I was in. So, oh, and there was another leader I was serving under who was in India, who was very much like this, a very, very heavy. So there was, I can't blame anyone in particular, but there was definitely a mood like that throughout the movement. That it seems that the leaders were imitating Prabhupada's heaviness, as Prabhupada was legendarily heavy, without seeing the other side also. Whereas nowadays it seems to go on to the other side, that devotees always talk about how sweet and kind Prabhupada was, but they don't remember how heavy he was also. So the pendulum swung to the other side. So I was also influenced by that, but I saw that it's not good for me or for others. So we need another arm here. It's okay. You just say until you collapse dead. How do monsters become monsters? Well, by bad association. This again, it may be a very controversial statement, but I feel that the association of some of the leaders in our movement is not actually very conducive for spiritual advancement, and I won't elaborate more. Except, well, I have heard some devotees saying that after going to a regional leaders meeting, they feel they just have to chant and read for a few days, just to, after all the dealings between them, they feel so drained and uninspired that they feel they have to read and chant for a few days just to purify themselves. There's something wrong there. There's something seriously wrong. So we've heard the term servant leader. Everyone in Krishna consciousness should understand, I am a servant. Even if we take the position of a leader, we are a servant. We shouldn't think that's our constitutional position, to be a leader. It may be that you're a town president today, and tomorrow you may be digging in the garden or whatever. Or you may be the temple president today is also digging in the garden. And actually, it's not a bad idea if the leaders also do some what we might call more menial service. Be the servant of everyone, instead of thinking I'm a leader so everyone is inferior to me. To be a leader with little peer association or guidance or checks and balances can be very dangerous. So keep good association. And again, by reading and chanting, listening to Prabhupada's lectures, if you can't get anything else, I'm talking again about in Bangladesh and Thailand, I was often in situations where I had very little association or good association. So I made it a point to compensate for that, if you like, by reading a lot and hearing Prabhupada's lectures a lot. It's most important to keep good association. There's one reason why we have these yatras and festivals, so devotees can come together. It's nice if different leaders also come together and not miss that for whatever reasons. We need to consult others, especially when making major decisions. We can learn from others' errors. For instance, we now know within our movement that although cow protection is supposed to be one of the major programs of our movement, it has to be undertaken very carefully and not just build up a big herd that we can't properly look after, and that is liable to expand more and more in future. But I'm talking about some of the leaders under me, more than one, who without seeing that this or that this has been a big problem with our movement. Without consulting anyone, they're just getting more and more cows and making the same mistakes that others have done. And then it becomes, although we want to serve Mother Cow, we have other things to do also. So it can be that it becomes actually an obstacle to our preaching and all our other activities if we have so many cows that we can't properly look after. Or even one or two cows. I know devotees who are, they've got cows, just one or two cows, and they can't really do much or go anywhere because you have to be there. You can't take a holiday from looking after cows. You have to be there at least in the morning and the evening to look after them, the various things that they require. So when, for instance, we're going to build a temple that costs crores, it's a major endeavor. So definitely a lot of consultation should be there with devotees, especially with devotees who have done this before, and with contractors and all kinds of people we need to consult. And we see in money management that so much is wasted, for instance, in building unnecessary or largely unnecessary or poorly built structures, building them at high cost, unnecessarily high cost, because practically we get cheated by all different kinds of people. Don't be penny wise and pound foolish, like scrimping and not feeding devotees properly, because you want to save a few pennies, but then you waste lakhs and crores by not consulting others properly, making poor decisions and spending money. Spend money for preaching, especially for youth preaching. You don't require that much, but for festivals, regular prasadam for the programs, that is an investment in the future which will pay back, even in terms of money, what to speak in terms of devotees who can carry the movement forward in future. Consult also in day-to-day matters those who you are dealing with. You may consult the cook or the cleaner or the whatever. Don't think you know it all. Or even if you do know better, you can help others to come up by asking them and making them think about it also. Even if you already know what's the best way to do something, you can ask others. And like that, yeah, make them think. If you just dictate, then others may follow out of respect or fear, but they'll gradually become alienated. So it's better to encourage and inspire others than to dictate or micromanage. Micromanage means to try and control every aspect of people's lives. Of course, the leaders, they must give orders and there must be discipline, but there must be a balance also. Srila Prabhupada was regal and he ruled, but he was also flexible. He often severely chastised leaders, especially for their errors. Not everyone can lead like that. Not everyone has that kind of personality to you can chastise others strongly. And another thing is, in my own case, I feel like I can't do that because I'm not so much above my disciples as Srila Prabhupada was above his disciples. And similarly, those who are leading others as town president, Sankirtan party leaders, Gurukul teachers or whatever, they're not so much above others. that they can just rule them and dictate to them. There is time and place where some shouting may be in order, some chastisement may be in order. But in my case, I would prefer that I'm trying to impart this kind of instruction by asking devotees to hear me, that consult with myself on very major decisions, just like that. Or at least keep me informed. Just like I don't know anything about building temples, but I could tell you to advise you that you should consult those who do know, because I don't. It's a very specialized thing. So please, please, along with hearing Srila Prabhupada's lectures, you can listen to mine also. You can imbibe, being my disciples, you can imbibe the mood in which I'm serving Srila Prabhupada. I'm not saying you don't listen to others' lectures, but you're welcome to do that also. But try to imbibe the mood that I'm trying to impart to you, which is my understanding of how Srila Prabhupada taught. You can also read my books. Reading Srila Prabhupada's books are the most important, but you can also read this strongly speaking in Srila Prabhupada's service will be very helpful for preachers and leaders. And when you've read all of Srila Prabhupada's books, to read Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava will also be helpful. So these books, they're meant primarily for at least my disciples could read them. It seems that some of my disciples, they never hear me. I don't know if they're hearing my lectures at all. They're like in their own world. Some of the disciples who I just kind of gave up on, I don't really try to guide them or instruct them, because they're, like I say, they're in their own world. They don't really want to hear. They may be in Krishna consciousness, but it's defined in according to their own understanding. They don't really want to take anything from me. Some other points. Very important for leaders. Confidentiality is essential. If someone, leaders, generally they get to know confidential things about others, or people confide in them. If something's confidential, keep it confidential. One of the worst things you can do is to betray confidentiality. Of course, there may be some cases where that should be revealed. Just like if someone says, I'd like to tell you in confidence that I'm abusing children and I don't know what to do about it. Well, in such a case, you shouldn't keep confidence. You have to immediately take moves to protect the children, rather than hoping that the devotee, or whatever he is who confided in you, will be able to rectify himself. So there may be cases, but in general, confidentiality should be maintained. And I regularly hear all kinds of things about people which really shouldn't be, and they're not meant to be shared with others, and I haven't shared them with others. If you do share things which are not meant to be shared, it destroys trust, and then no one will place confidence in you. You won't be able to help and guide others. Very important, be transparent in money matters and deal properly in money matters. Money matters can very easily destroy trust and friendship. Just like you may take a loan, in general, don't take loans, especially personal loans. If you have to take a loan, don't do it without consulting others. In general, don't take loans. It may be for buying a car, something like that. But personal, I mean, nowadays everyone buys cars on loans, pretty much. You may do for a Sankirtan party, then they have to pay it off gradually by distributing books. But taking personal loans is generally not a good policy. But if you do, pay it off within the stipulated time. And it's generally not a good policy to take personal loans, because it often happens that circumstances change, and even though you may have wanted to, you're not able to repay. To take a loan and then not repay it at all is not good at all. To take money and say, okay, you're giving this money for this purpose, and to use it for a different purpose, which the person who gave it didn't want to give it for, that all these kind of things, they create a bad feeling. Don't be money oriented, although definitely much money is needed within the Krishna conscious movement, and leaders have to be conscious of that. But if we come across to others that we're just thinking money, 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 money all the time, then no one will like that. We'll be seen as money oriented people, just like ordinary materialistic people. And that's also a consideration. Just for building temples and projects, money is required, and then we just push everyone into, all the devotees into collecting money. It can be very difficult, and devotees just get drained of spiritual energy. So we have to be very careful when taking on projects that we do. It's not such that we're going to just drain all the devotees of their spiritual enthusiasm. There are so many things can be said about this, but I'll leave it at that for now. A devotee shouldn't be seen as loving luxury or spending money unnecessarily on oneself. There should be no question of a leader in Krishna consciousness being too close to women. And that applies to grihasthas also. It's for grihasthas to look after women, not for sannyasis of course, sannyasis, they all may also have women. Disciples, but they're not supposed to interact with them very closely. That's grihastha dharma. Srila Prabhupada wrote to one disciple, don't try to be too big too fast. So don't promote yourself to the status of a Mahabhagavata or think that you're a big guru and dictate to others how to live. grow gradually is better. Be humble. Know that a good preacher is not necessarily a good manager. You should just understand that. It's actually a different varna in the varnashram system. A preacher is a brahmana and a manager is a kshatriya. So Srila Prabhupada was both, but that's unusual actually. Of course, because our movement is a preaching movement, then the best preachers often become the managers, but to inspire others the preacher is naturally a leader, so they can inspire others by taking a leadership role. It is required that some devotees take leadership roles. Again, we're not just running down every leader or saying that they're all in Maya. It is very much required that devotees take leadership roles. It is a great sacrifice. It is very difficult. We should respect that. But we should also know that a good preacher is not necessarily a good manager. So a leader should know his limits. Everyone has their limits. Not everyone's expert in everything. Don't be attached to a leadership role. You can stand aside if someone's better for the job. Many leaders in our movement have done that. They've led the project, inaugurated. Often the one who's good at getting a project together and creating it is not so good at managing it on a day-to-day basis, because again, its creation is more in Rajagun and maintenance is more in Sattvagun. So all these things are to be considered. So don't become discouraged by all of this, and don't be discouraged by the criticism of others also. You should listen to it and see if it's appropriate, but don't think, well, it's all useless. It's better to, both with oneself and with others, it's better to rectify rather than remove. As far as possible, try to rectify oneself and others. We have to work within the ISKCON structure. We are members of ISKCON. We are promoting the followers of Srila Prabhupada within ISKCON. So for better or worse, all that is often difficult, no doubt, to work within the ISKCON structure. We have to continue to do that if we are at all to take the advantages or that accrue from being in ISKCON. That devotees present themselves in ISKCON that has a respectable name. So we also, that helps our preaching. So we have to work within that. I'm really not condemning any of the devotees, for the leaders and others for whom this is meant. No doubt they're all very sincere, but some, obviously, I'm worried about. Otherwise, I wouldn't be saying these things. Remember always that what you do affects others, either good or bad, and it reflects on me also. So we can all remember that what we do, either good or bad, that will be, as leaders, that will be seen by others. And for the public, that reflects on Srila Prabhupada and his institution. So we should remember that. We have a great responsibility. And within our movement, those who are my disciples or followers and have taken leadership positions, what they do will reflect on me also within our movement. I'm worried about others. I don't know if speaking all these things will have any effect. Again, it's not really directed at anyone in particular, but practically everyone can consider all these points, because anyone can fall into Maya at any time, and those who have been sincerely leading can become clogged up in their position. A common symptom of being in Maya is that if someone points it out to you, you don't like to accept it. Especially not from juniors, and maybe not even from those they should accept it from. In this case, myself. I must admit, some of my disciples, I feel it's difficult to say to them, because I'm afraid that they might not take it in the right way. So try to understand everything through Shastric knowledge. We should understand everything through Shastra. This is not meant to be a management meeting in the sense that like a management seminar like the Karmis do. We should see everything through the eyes of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. And particularly because in Shastra there isn't much direction about how one should organize a spiritual movement. We should look to Srila Prabhupada's example for how he managed. Srila Prabhupada was very concerned about details like accounts and quality of buildings and getting things done on time. He was very managerially oriented. He was very sharp in all these matters. But he managed to a large extent by not only by doing all these things, but by preaching also. He'd preach to devotees and to bring them up to the level of consciousness required to lead and manage in Krishna consciousness. That's another point, that the terms leader and manager are different terms. And devotees are not just meant to be managers, but leaders. And leaders means leader in preaching, leader in hearing and chanting, leader in the endeavor to be pure devotees and to perform pure devotional service. We have to understand everything through Shastra, but even if we're knowledgeable in Shastra, but if we mislead or mistreat others, we'll get repercussions. We should understand from Shastra that everything good we do, everything bad we do, there's an effect from that. And that's true for you and me and everyone else except Krishna and his innermost devotees. Srila Prabhupada did say in one lecture that the GBC should be careful, otherwise they'll have to see Yamaraj. It's a very heavy thing to say. But like I said at the beginning, you can do great good and great harm in a position of leadership. It's a very heavy thing to say. Srila Prabhupada said it, so it's true for all of us. So we shouldn't think we're beyond Maya. Maya can hit us even after 40 years of performing devotional service. We're in the atmosphere of Maya. If every time in the rainy season, every time we go out, we bring an umbrella, and that way we stay somewhat dry. But if one day we forget, we get soaking wet. So the same thing. If we may have been practicing Krishna consciousness for 40 years, but if we think, well, okay, now I don't need to hear and chant, and I don't need to follow all the sadhana, I don't have to be careful about offending devotees, and then we'll get wet. Maya will hit us. That means Maya's already hit us if we think like that. After 40 years, after 10,000 years, we can get hit. Leaders should know that they cannot take the allegiance of their followers or the devotees that they presume to be their followers. They cannot take their allegiance for granted. The whole world atmosphere is full of distrust, especially of leaders who are practically expected to exploit those who they have jurisdiction over. That has a historical premise, and within ISKCON also, due to various or many unfortunate happenings in the short history of ISKCON, there is a widespread atmosphere of distrust of leaders. So don't take it for granted that devotees will just follow you and love you. Allegiance has to be earned. Leaders have to work for it. They can't take it for granted. Even if there's a little misdealing or a little impropriety on the part of any leader, that is likely to lead to a gulf of distrust. If someone who's trusted. If they act in a little way wrongly, then people say, oh, he's just like everyone else. You see, he's look good, but what can you expect? And in this way, the trust is lost. So yeah, one has to really work for that trust. That means to actually be a spiritual leader and actually act for the benefit of others, to recognize one's errors, apologize for them, and at the same time, again, not be discouraged. Go forward. One has to keep on giving direction and leading, even though others may not appreciate that, but be careful not to engender any situation in which there's a widespread discontent. So these topics could be elaborated on in great detail. Here are just a couple of more points. Two ways in which Maya commonly strikes is for someone to think, well, I'm a leader now, I'm a manager, I have so many duties, so many things to do, so I don't need to follow sadhana properly. And by which their consciousness becomes contaminated. And then things go from bad to worse. They go downhill from there. Of course, they may not think like that originally, but it's just one thing after another comes. That's the very nature of management. You say, well, I have to do this, I have to do that, I have to cut down on my sadhana because I'm so busy doing this and that. I have to manage this and manage that, but we should know that the strength to manage anything in Krishna consciousness comes from, or in anything, and especially in Krishna's service, comes from Krishna, who we have to link with by the process of bhakti yoga, of which management service is not outside of bhakti yoga, but the very basis of that is hearing and chanting about Krishna. Another way in which Maya commonly strikes leaders is by money, and we become, when we get money, and Kali enters, and we want to hoard money, especially hoarded money. If we keep extra money instead of spending it for Krishna, then that money serves to pollute our consciousness because we're not using it for Krishna. Yeah, maybe the idea is that we'll use it in future, but practically we're sitting on top of it and not engaging it in Krishna's service, as Lakshmi should also always be engaged in the service of Narayan. So don't keep money, spend it. And especially don't keep it in any personal account. Of course, it may be that a traveling preacher has keeps some money for travel expenses and this and that, but nothing more than what is needed. Be very careful. Then, one consideration is that a leader in the Krishna conscious movement, they may start to identify themselves more that I am a temple president, I am a guru, I am a GBC member, I am a Sankirtan party leader. They may start to identify themselves like that more than the basic definition or understanding that I am a servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna and his devotees. So we shouldn't, like a materialist does, so much identify with our position, which is temporary. Being town president is temporary. Being a servant of Krishna is our real identity. Even being a guru, that the guru means a servant of everyone else. So our constitutional position is not to be a guru. Krishna's constitutional position is to be the leader and the guide of everyone. So one is a guru on behalf of Krishna, as a king is a king on behalf of Krishna, or a temple president is a temple president on behalf of Krishna.
So again, this is not to discourage anyone, but to emphasize our grave
responsibility in the service of Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna! Any questions, comments, protests, or petitions, campaigns?
We hear that we should be very careful and we should have healthy fear of Maya. But sometimes it happens that we become too much scared of Maya and we don't do anything in Krishna consciousness. That situation also comes.
Too much scared of Maya and we don't do anything? Well, that's also being in Maya, isn't it? It's healthy to be scared of Maya. But then the antidote is to practice Krishna consciousness, not just to sit and not do anything. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the way I perceive what you spoke, it aims at rectifying the faults you mentioned, yeah, especially of the leaders.
Yeah.
And one of the faults was that...
Well, let me see. Yeah. Rectification, yes, but more like be careful not to... Rectifying those who have got into this kind of mindset that I've described is very difficult, but rather catch yourself before you get into that. And rectification, yeah, we all need to rectify.
I just thought, you know, one of the faults you mentioned is that not to listen to others, not to... Yeah, consider that. So what if a leader has this quality and even after listening, you know, things like you said, you know, it just doesn't appeal, they don't change, or they don't even think it it applies to them. So is there any plan B what to do, or we can just see, you know, it happens in front of our eyes that leaders just don't change and they're just the same.
Our movement should have a policy to deal with this, which is one reason why Srila Prabhupada's direction of management is being spoken about a lot, in which he said that there should be regular elections of leaders. Although what Harishari Prabhu told me, and I don't think that he ever deliberately misrepresents anything he's heard from Srila Prabhupada. He might have misunderstood, or he might sometimes put his own interpretation on what he hears. That's natural for everyone, but he, from what I can see, he's very sincere about accurately representing what he heard from Srila Prabhupada and what he observed. So when I asked him about this, about the direction of management, he said that Srila Prabhupada had decided not to implement it. In one of the points there was that leaders should be, in all posts, should be regularly elected, but he decided not to implement it because he thought it would create too much politics, not the way suffering from any lack of politics within our society. Well, actually, it's not as bad as it used to be, because a lot of people who are doing politics just gave up on trying to rectify the situation. So plan B, there is no plan B. Wait till they die. That's all. And hope for the best. Or just hope that things might get better in the meantime with it. It's hope against hope. That's also the...
Something like replacing the... Is it possible to replace the leader who is not doing well or really mischievous?
Well, that's already been discussed. Only if someone breaks the regulated principles or is very, yeah, like you say, really. But even there are cases of leaders who have, you know, really been, it's been exposed, that they're doing really bad things and they don't get removed. So, anyway, we're getting into another realm now. I'm mostly wanting to say, I'm not talking about how we can, right now, I'm not talking about how we can rectify the whole movement or what are the problems in the whole movement. I'm just speaking to those of my disciples who are in leadership positions about the risky situation they're in, and please be careful. That's all.
I told in the lecture that the leaders, he said in the lecture that the leaders, for taking a major decision, they should consult you at least. So I know at least one of the leaders who says that nowadays, means the present scenario, you are very busy in writing, so we should not disturb you. And he encourages others also not to consult you, and he tells that I am representative, means I know what is Maharaj mood, and you follow me, that is the correct thing. Means without your consultation, they take their decisions on their own. They think that not to disturb you, but sometimes the decisions are wrong, some major decisions.
Therefore, I'm giving this lecture. I myself, often when their devotees bring their problems to me, or their different, I consult certain god brothers or other devotees. I quite often do that. I don't think I'm Sarvagya Bhagavan, God who knows everything.